Welcome to the SI Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Back for another week after Chris Berman last week. Got some good feedback on the man known as Boomer. Really appreciate that. It was an interesting interview. It was an hour, and he is a broadcast icon, whether you like him or not. So I was happy to have him on, and I appreciate everyone who checked that out and gave me some comments about it on Twitter. If you're not a subscriber, please do subscribe. Please leave reviews if you hear the Chris Berman one and you liked it. Would love a review. 2 weeks ago, Jim Cornette. Would love you to review it on iTunes. It means a lot. This week's episode of the SI Media Podcast features two separate interviews. First up, manager of the Phillies, Gabe Kapler, who worked at Fox Sports FS1 for a couple of years, and then he went into the Dodgers front office for a year, I think, and then manager of the Phillies. So it's a phenomenal conversation. If you are on the fence about listening, please give it a chance. I don't understand how you cannot be a huge Gabe Kapler fan after you hear this interview. It's a lot of talk about being a manager, dealing with the media, dealing with players, how important the media is to a manager, and what his day is like as a manager and how the media fits into that. I thought it was a great interview. Obviously, I'm biased, but please check that out. And then after Gabe Kapler, you're going to hear from the Long Brothers of the NFL, very popular on Twitter, Chris Long of the Eagles, who's always in the news, and Kyle Long of the Bears. And that's just a fun conversation with two very amusing individuals. And, you know, it's the middle of summer. Lighthearted interview. Get some humor and get a little football fix for you. So Gabe Kapler up first. I think if you're into media and sports in any way, you will love it. After that, Chris and Kyle Long for some antics. And that is this week's show. So let's go right now to the manager of the first place Philadelphia Phillies, Gabe Kapler. All right, joining me now, and I'm looking forward to this spot, something a little different. We usually have announcers and writers on the podcast, but we're doing a baseball manager today, but he was in the media, and he can talk about both sides of it, and he's had a great first half in his first year, and he is Philly skipper Gabe Kapler. Gabe, thanks for joining me.
Jimmy, really, really happy to have some time to talk to you.
And you're outside right now. We hear a little noise in the background. So give the audience a little, just set the scene. Where are you right now on this All-Star break? Where are you enjoying the time off? Are you in Philly?
I'm in Philly. I'm in a little spot called Fishtown, which is right outside of Philadelphia, kind of bars and coffee shops and restaurants and easy to walk from place to place. Didn't want to do a whole lot of anything or have any sort of schedule. So I'm just sort of out and about during the break.
Yeah, what's your plan for these days off here? And you guys get back to it on Friday. We're taping this on Tuesday. Podcasts come out Thursday. Any plans, or is it just chill and relax?
Yeah, you know, a perfect day off for me doesn't really have plans. If I sit down at a coffee shop and get a good cup of coffee and pull out my iPad for a couple of hours, I'm really happy. I don't need to go on a jet ski or go parasailing or travel to Europe to be in my element and be fulfilled. Really what I try to do is just escape for a little while. And if that just means putting away my phone and reading for a little while, yeah, that's a great break.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I have so many questions about the phone, social media, things like that. And like I said, I wanted to have you on because you're in your first year. You did come from the media. You worked at FS1 and Fox for a little while. And then you got the Phillies here in first place at the All-Star break after an interesting first week of your career. So let me start with this. What advantage did you have becoming a major league manager here with the Phillies from working at Fox? And how much did that help you deal with the Philly media in this first half?
Sure, I think that's an appropriate place to start. So when I would come to the studio for Fox and do Fox Sports Live, and whip around any of the baseball shows or cover games, I was at the studio for long hours. And it might be 2 o'clock in the afternoon to midnight. And, you know, all I was thinking about was interacting with personalities on air. And there's a big component of the job as a major league manager that is making yourself available to media members. And not just making yourself available to them, but understanding what their job is and understanding what they're trying to accomplish with the pieces they write, with the tweets they send out, with their Instagram posts, etc. So I think understanding what I needed as a member of the media helps me be empathetic to and understand what our local media in Philadelphia need, as well as the national media covering the Phillies.
And the Philly media has a reputation for being tough. I'm here in New York. Obviously, that's another tough one. But Philly, their reputation is tough. Have you found it tougher or easier to deal with than you anticipated before the season started?
I think it's right in line with what I expected. So I have a high level of awareness that when things are going good, that things are going to be smooth, right, or smoother. And when things are going bad, and when I say going bad, I mean not hitting, not winning baseball games, late inning failures, etc., I'm going to get punched in the face over it, which I fully expect, which I fully appreciate, and which I embrace, because I see it as a challenge, and especially a challenge to keep people in the city of Philadelphia positive about our club, but also to help form some of the narratives that are out there. And so when things are rough, and people are looking for answers, I find it a challenge and inspiring to come up with narratives that make sense, are appropriate and accurate about our club, that people can latch onto.
Have you found any of the coverage unfair? You had a crazy first week, which I want to get to. But overall, do you think the Philly media has been fair with you? Have you had any issues, anything close to maybe a blow up with the reporter, or has it been smooth sailing, especially since that first week?
I don't think there's anything. There is no smooth sailing. However, I do think I've been treated fairly.
Okay, that's
I
good.
Do think I've been treated with respect. I do think I've been given an opportunity to share my thoughts, and that's all I can ever ask for. I don't want it to be easy, because it's not as rewarding if it is. I like challenges. I like being inspired. And I like having an opportunity to make a case, and I've had that opportunity.
I guess what I should have started with originally, I'm curious, what is your media consumption in terms of, do you check the local papers every morning? Do you check Twitter? Do you want to know what the beat writers are writing? Or do you avoid it? Do you have PR people filling you in on what's going on? I'm curious how you consume Philly's media.
I read everything.
Wow, okay.
And mainly, I want to understand people's angles. I can learn from their angles, and I get to know them well through what they write. And when I say them, I'm talking about our local media. A lot of our beat writers and the people that write about Philadelphia sports in general, I find it fascinating, and I look forward to reading their pieces. I think they do really good work. As it relates to national media, I probably have time to read less national media, but I do get to it. I do follow some national writers on Twitter, baseball writers, and I follow a lot of our local writers on Twitter as well, follow their Instagram accounts if they have them. Yeah, and mainly it's my way of keeping up on what Philadelphia thinks and what the United States think about our club.
Right. And do you ever feel that you guys are playing well, you're sitting there at 53-42, and most people were not expecting that out of Phillies this year. So first place, like I said, I would imagine most of it's been positive, but if you see something negative, wrong, something you disagree with, factually wrong, do you confront the writer, or do you just store it in the memory bank?
I definitely think it's less a confrontation, mm-hmm, and much more a healthy conversation. So if a local writer is painting a picture that I think just isn't super accurate, I might just say, hey, I read your piece. I really enjoyed it. Here are some things about it that I think may have missed the mark. I could be wrong here, but let's have a chat about it. When are you going to be in?
Right.
And, you know, maybe they're in the next day. We have a chance to sit down over a cup of coffee, talk it through. Maybe they don't come off their position, but I had my voice heard, and I do think it's important, because they're shaping the opinions of the readers in Philadelphia, that they have my vantage point on it, and that I've spent time thinking about it and researching it.
I'm this is working out way better than I even thought, because I'm fascinated by how much you're involved in the media coverage. It's very interesting to me. If you can break down your job in terms of, you have to deal with the media, you have to deal with your clubhouse, and then you have to manage the game. Is it are all those things equally important? Is what goes on from, you know, most nights 7:05 to 10:30, where you're managing your lineup, your bullpen strategy there, is that still the most important thing, or do you think the clubhouse, the media, that's just as important as managing the games? I'm curious how you sort of break down the compartments of your job.
It's kind of difficult to compartmentalize because they all bleed into one another. And very specifically, I think my number one job, the thing that is most important that I do, is putting our players in a position to have success, whether that means building confidence, motivating, keeping them healthy mentally or physically, and giving them tools to do those things. But a lot of those are shaped by what's being said publicly about them.
Right.
So that becomes extraordinarily important. Their performance in-game matters, obviously, for any number of reasons, and leads to their mental health and well-being. So, you know, they're all intertwined. I don't know that I could apply any specific percentage to each and weight them appropriately,
right,
but I can say every one of them individually is critically important.
And what do you think what's been the most challenging, running, dealing with the media, the clubhouse, or managing the games?
I would say the most challenging component of the job is running out of hours in the day. So my goal is always to have as many conversations as possible. I believe that this job is a relentless communication job, both with the players, with the front office, with the media, with the city, right? Like, you're just constantly communicating. And what I find is every night when I crash, there was three or four conversations that I wanted to get to that I didn't get to. And whether those conversations were in text or email or in person, they're all important to me. And so it's tough that I don't have enough hours in the day, and I find myself, you know, just sort of tired at the end of the day, and I can't stay up past, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning or whenever it is, and I have to get some rest.
So all right. Well,
it's just running out of time.
I'm okay. So I'm curious then, based on that answer, if you don't mind, take me through typical game. Phillies have a game 7:05 at home. Take me through the typical. Don't think it's boring or minutiae. I want to hear from what time you wake up, and take me through your day on a typical game day, 7:05 starts. And I'm curious, since you say you don't have enough hours in the day, break down like the typical day for the manager of the Phillies.
I think it's more personal than just a manager of the Phillies. But I'll share this. I generally get up on a day game, or excuse me, on a 7 o'clock game, somewhere in the vicinity of 7:30. Mm-hmm. And then I go and I have coffee, and I pull out my iPad, and I start to think about the opposing club. And I'll spend enough time there where I feel prepared, and I head to the ballpark somewhere around 11:30. That's when I like to get there. And then from there,
11:30 for a 7:05 game. Wow. Okay.
It's not unusual, right? Yeah. It's really not. By the time I get there, Rob Thompson, our bench coach, is usually there. By the time I get there, Rick Kranitz, our pitching coach, is probably there too. So it's okay. Not, I know it sounds crazy, but it's really not that crazy. And, you know, once we get there, it's just conversation after conversation, lineup preparation. You know, perhaps it's who's going to pinch hit for who that night. I map out bullpen usage. I talk to the media. And, you know, I try to get a meal in there. And then before you know it, it's 6:45 and you're out for the anthem. Also trying to squeeze in a workout during that time period. And then after the game, it's more media, it's more discussions, and the lineup changes for the next day based on what happened in that game. And I just crash whenever I can't keep my eyes open anymore.
Right. Huh. It's I was waiting for you to say workout, because obviously you're known for the physique, which we'll get to later, but I was waiting for you to when you said you went from the coffee to the iPad to the ballpark, I was wondering when you were going to get that in. You've mentioned the iPad a few times. How many iPads do you have, just out of curiosity?
One. One of my recommendations has been adding a keyboard to my iPad, and mainly because I'm communicating via text on my iPad. I'm able to access files, lineup considerations, spray charts, etc., without having to change devices. So the reason I'm always mentioning my iPad is because I have it connected to a keyboard. I use it as a communication device, and I'm always using it as a computer. So it's just super convenient, right. And I know it sounds nerdy, but it keeps me sharp.
This is the age we live in now. I'm curious, I've mentioned it a couple of times, I might as well get to this before we get to other. So the first week you were managing the Phillies, even opening day, I didn't know if sort of maybe we were always headed this way, given what social media has become and just overall media. The reaction to that opening day loss and then that first week, it was nothing I've ever seen before for a man. I mean, people are saying you should be fired after the first game, after the first week. I had never seen a reaction like that to a manager before. Did you feel that? Were you aware of that? Were you cognizant of it? Or were you tuning everything out because, you know, you had just started this new job and you were focused on your team?
You know what? I really understood it, Jimmy. Look, things that are different, things that feel unsafe, things that feel awkward, they just make people squirm.
Right.
And, you know, when you come in and Aaron Nola is your best pitcher and you take Aaron Nola out of the game before he really has a chance to go deep into the game and protect your bullpen, people are like, what is going on here? Why would you ever do something like that?
Right.
They had no idea what was going on in my brain, which was preserving Nola's bullets for subsequent starts. They had no idea what was going on in my brain, which was fresh bullpen coming out of spring training and trying to get everybody involved as early as possible. They didn't know that I was strategizing to keep people involved. But nobody cares, right? Like, and I understand that. Why should they? What they care about is that the Phillies come out victorious and that Aaron Nola gets the credit and the praise that he deserves, which he does. He was tremendous that day. And none of those things happened.
Right.
So people were upset. They were bitter. And I understood it then. I understand it now. I don't fault anybody for reacting and responding the way they did. They were scared. They were uncomfortable. They were skittish.
You weren't even a little taken aback by it? Because I'm in the media, and I was taken aback by it.
I mean, obviously, I look, when we got back to Philadelphia, the reception wasn't great, right? And why should it have been? But I understood it. It's the equivalent of a player starting off the season with a bunch of strikeouts. People start to be concerned immediately. I understood that people were going to have trouble with it. I was prepared for it. I knew that the storm was happening around me and not inside of me. And I was able to stay calm and composed. And I'll continue to do that through all the ups and downs.
My take on it, and maybe I'm not objective because I do know you a little bit. We full disclosure, Gabe was at Fox FS1 while I had worked for FoxSports.com, and that's how we got to know each other a little bit. And to me, you explained why you did it. And to me, whether you did it for that reason or let's say you didn't know what was going on and you totally had screwed it up, to call for a firing after a game or a week, I thought was just so over the top. And there were legitimate calls for it. I thought it was insane, but you seem to... you're very zen about it, and I definitely envy that about you. I'm going to sprinkle in some baseball questions here throughout this interview in the little time we have left, but I'm just curious because you mentioned preserving your bullpen. What do you think about what the Rays, mainly the Rays, other teams have done it a little bit, but the Rays have been the main team with using relievers and closers to start games for an inning. Is that something you would ever consider? And what's your take on that strategy?
Well, one thing that I've learned early on, Jimmy, is that as important as baseball strategy is people's comfort levels, their emotions, and what will allow them to feel confident. So from a strategy standpoint, if everybody felt exactly the way they felt as they were used normally, I think the strategy makes a lot of sense because you get the matchups that you want. It's going to be very difficult for the opposing manager to counter your move. So I think there's a lot of strategy upside. However, with our club, we have a very young club, A, and B, we have a city that tends to feel uncomfortable with stuff like that. And I think that 5 years from now, it'll be commonplace. Right now, it might just not be the right fit for our club.
Do you see more teams going to that system more and more this year, next year, or do you think it's still something? You said 5 years possibly for your team. But do you think, so clearly you think this is the future for Major League Baseball?
Oh, I'm not saying that it's 5 years for our team. Team. I think that might come when it's going to come when it comes.
Right.
But I will say that sooner or later, Major League Baseball will catch on to the fact that the strategy makes sense.
Right.
And if you can get the buy-in of the players and the coaching staff, then you can make strong decisions like that. I don't know when exactly that's going to be commonplace, but I don't imagine it's going to take very long.
So if your pitcher's bought in, you would do it then?
I think it's not just that consideration. There's a lot of considerations, okay. But that's one of them.
Okay. And we sit here at the All-Star break. The Home Run Derby was Monday night. I don't know if you saw it. It just came down. The rating was not good. It was down more than 20% from last year, even though it was an exciting derby for people who watched it. The reviews were all positive if people watched it. There was a lot going on last night on Monday night with Trump and Putin was dominating cable news. So you might have had a lot of people tuning into that. The Bachelorette had a big episode. I know that got a monster rating. So the competition was there. But there is this overall theme. There's a lot's been written, and I'm not going to ask you to specifically talk about another player. That wouldn't be fair. But there's been a lot written about lately about Mike Trout's the best player in baseball, but his personality is not there, and it's hurting the game a little bit. My question to you is, if I'm putting you in charge of Major League Baseball, let's say I make you Rob Manfred for a day, give me three things Gabe Kapler would do to increase the popularity and maybe appeal to younger people for Major League Baseball.
I don't know off the top of my head. I could speculate and make stuff up. It's not something that I've been thinking deeply about. And the last thing I'd want to do is just kind of bullshit you here.
Okay,
I don't know.
No, that's fair. That's fair. There was a report today that, and I don't know if it's true, but I think it was something Tony Clark may have said about, there's a lot of talk the National League may go to the DH. Is that something you would be pro or con?
It would take a lot of deep thought for me to come to a pro or a con on. Okay. And I don't mean to sidestep any of these.
No, that you
it's
can...
more. I'm no longer a member of the media.
Right.
So I don't have to opine on stuff like this immediately when asked.
Right.
I'd much prefer to spend the time digging into the issues and coming up with a well thought out response.
That's
however,
more than fair.
I'm glad to give it a little thought and send you a note, and you can tell on your next podcast, give people
sure
my feedback.
I'd
on
love
it.
That. I'd love that. Here's one you may have an opinion on as a manager. I saw something that said players would like to get rid of 4 p.m. start times. Is that
that one? I can easily opine on.
Okay, so tell me what's bad about the now. Here's the it's crazy about it. As a fan, I love the 4 p.m. start time. So tell me, as a player and manager, why it's bad.
First, because our schedules are constantly being disrupted just by the travel of East Coast to West Coast, even a 1 o'clock day game on a Sunday to a 7 o'clock. When you add in the 4 o'clock, it's very difficult to get your body into a rhythm and recover.
Right.
So now all of a sudden you're not getting the freshest, most productive, most exciting, most athletic players. And that's really why people watch the sport, because they're the best in the world. Well, if you want them to be the best in the world, you have to let them recover as elite athletes and treat them as such. The 4 o'clock start kind of puts a damper on that. The other thing I think is worth noting is that at 4 o'clock, you give the pitcher a significant edge.
Right.
And I'm not sure how well it's been studied, but most of the time, at 4 o'clock, there's shadows all over the field. And hitters are looking out at pitchers, and the pitcher's in direct sunlight, and right in front of them they have, like, three spots of shadow, and they lose the ball. Again, I would have to go look at some studies here to see if that actually makes a difference, but that would be my gut reaction off the top of my head.
It is. Any time I've interviewed a Major League Baseball player, I always ask them the question I'd ask you about, give me something you change about the game, or, you know, if you were commissioner for a day, what would you? And every player always gives me the same answer, and it's about the travel. Every player says it. And you know, the amount of travel and the start times. You know, I'm a Yankee fan. the amount of games where the Yankees have a Sunday night 8 p.m. ESPN game and then they're in another city the next night for a Monday night game, you know, I know it's a big thing with them. So I know you didn't want to answer that question about what would you change, but talk to me about the travel. Is it as bad isn't though? Is it as rough as players seem to always discuss? And is it something, you know, you'd like to see maybe cut down a little bit?
The travel itself is cushy in first class, but yeah. it's the schedules that are brutal.
Yeah,
and they really are not conducive to healthy athletes. I'm not sure how to fix that issue.
Right.
I know that a lot of it has to do with television. I know a lot of it has to do with attendance, but I do think it's a big deal. I will say this. Players separate themselves, managers separate themselves, teams separate themselves by performing best under suboptimal conditions. It's not the travel schedules are not brutal for just one team. They're brutal for everyone.
Right.
And so when I use the analogy of it doesn't rain on just one side of the field and not the other. So it's not like, you know, one player is wet and the other isn't. Everybody's fatigued at some point during the season.
Yeah.
So who can perform best? Who's toughest? Who's strongest under the suboptimal travel conditions?
Interesting. Yeah, it's something I don't think fans think about, but it's something players always discuss, which to me means it's an issue. Last one on this. Are you pro or con bat flips?
I like emotion in baseball.
Yeah.
I like players celebrating. I like high fives. I like seeds getting thrown up in the air. I like bat flips. I don't believe in everybody has to be the same and be. I love Matt Williams' style. When he used to hit a home run and put his head down and sprint around the bases, I thought that's really cool. But I would not like to have everybody be like Matt Williams.
Right.
I think the game would be boring.
Yeah.
So I love, you know, Chris Archer's style. I love Odubel Herrera's style at the plate. I love Fernando Rodney with the arrows. I love bat flips. I love Bryce Harper celebrating like he did last night. I love all of it. I think it's good for baseball.
All right. Glad to hear that. I'm curious a couple of things here. You're going to be 43 at the end of this month. So you're currently a 42-year-old manager, which is pretty young in the big leagues. Do you think that works to your advantage or disadvantage with your players?
I think that age is not even a factor. I think what matters is how committed you are, how much you love, how much you care for, how much investment you make in players. You could be 70 or you could be 20. If you do those things, you have a chance.
Right. I'm curious, what did you tell your players maybe in spring training or before the season started about social media? Is that something that the PR department handles, or do you handle it and maybe give them like a list of do's and don'ts, or is it not even something that comes up?
When I talk to players, I talk to them individually.
Okay.
And when I talk to them, they're all different. So I don't give them all the same advice. But most of the time, my thought would be, you can always use social media to your advantage. It's never dangerous if you're acting appropriately. So, for example, if there are some scare tactics out there that, you know, people are going to use what you say on social media to hurt you. But if you're constantly promoting your favorite charity on Twitter or on Instagram or any other social media platform, very difficult for somebody to come after you for that.
Right.
So there's a safe way to do everything. I think the larger the platforms are for these players, the more impact they can have in society, and I favor guys using social media to their benefit.
But you don't say to them, listen, whatever you do, don't respond to a fan who's, you know, trolling you on Twitter, and, you know, you got it, you know, something you just can't do. You're never going to win with someone like that. You don't get into, you handle it on a player by player basis.
Well, yeah. And I'll take it a step further.
Yeah.
I don't think there are rules like that. So
okay.
I think there are some players who probably shouldn't respond to fans because I think they're too emotional to have an effective communication line there or to have a really productive conversation. And I think there are others that could respond to any fan and diffuse a situation or even make it better and win over a fan. So I think it's very personality driven.
Now, okay, let's change gears here. Tell me, is it true when you were a minor league manager that you would be in the weight room with your team and you would sort of outlift your players?
I don't know.
Maybe. That's a yes.
That's 2007. So you're talking about 11 years ago.
Right. So you don't. You're not in the weight room now with the Phillies players.
No, I am. But okay. That's not an unusual thing. It's not a novelty. I mean, most managers will spend time in the weight rooms when their players are in there. Our entire coaching staff will spend time in the weight room with players there. So while I understand why that could be interesting, it's just normal.
Right. Well, but you were known for your physique, so that's why I think it becomes a big thing. Have you ever read your Wikipedia page?
Have I read it? I'm sure at some point I have, and it's constantly evolving, I hope.
Yeah. No, I read it in preparation for the interview, and there's a line in there that says, Kapler is well known in baseball for his extraordinary musculature. And it's got to be kind of amusing to have that line on your Wikipedia page.
I guess I just get so caught up in supporting our players that I realize that I'm less important. They're important. Yeah. I'm not.
Well, the one thing that's a little disappointing about you becoming a manager is you've stopped doing your health block, which I'm not a healthy person, unfortunately. I could use all the tips on your blog, but obviously your time is extremely limited. Like you said, you have no time in the day now. But I always enjoyed the health blog. I hope one day maybe in the off season you get back to it or something like that, because I thought there were some really good tips on there.
Yeah, you know, I really enjoyed writing, and I got a lot of fulfillment out of it. And I still write. I write for different reasons. And I guess what I'd say is they're two different jobs. Like managing a baseball team is less about what I'm thinking about and much more about what they're thinking about.
Yeah.
Players. So that's where my focus is right now.
And in the interest of full disclosure, before when you got hired, there were people in the media who used that blog sort of to question whether you were a good hire. And I actually wrote a column blasting some Philadelphia media people who were questioning your. Someone actually had the nerve to write that the blog may have been inappropriate for kids because you had talked about using coconut oil for something. And I actually I was invited on a Philly radio station and defended you. And I thought it was an absurd thing that people would use against you. Were you aware that that blog sort of even generated a little bit of controversy when you got hired?
I was, and mainly because I was asked a lot of questions about it.
Right. I remember that. Right. I think it was off that press conference. That's what it was now. You just jogged my memory. It was, you were asked questions at that press conference, and then there was a columnist who wrote a column, and it was absurd, and I wrote that it was absurd, and then I sort of ended up doing interviews saying, you know, this is nonsense. So, yeah, that's what happened. Did you ever think that would happen? A throwaway line about coconut oil would become part of your opening day, part of your intro press conference?
Well, I think very similarly to what I was sharing before, I understood it, right?
Yeah.
I understood who I was prior to being a manager, which was a member of the media. And so therefore, I was expressing my thoughts and opinions and kind of riffing on different things and saying things tongue-in-cheek that I would never probably say as a manager.
Right.
You know, you can tackle two different roles very differently.
Right.
And so I think that I was attacking my role as a member of the media effectively, and now I think my job is to look at just supporting our players and our city rather than, you know, expressing my philosophies on things like coconut oil.
Did the Phillies players ever rib you about the blog at all? Did they ever joke with you about it? Because, I mean, at the end of the day, it's funny. I mean, the only way you're upset about that is if you don't have a sense of humor. So, I mean, and players, obviously, there's always good-natured ribbing that goes on there. Did they ever bust your chops about it a little bit?
I've taken a little heat from our players, which I love.
Yeah, of course.
Right? Interestingly, a lot of the stuff that I wrote on that blog was directed at players.
Right.
And I have the perspective of being a player. When I started writing the blog, I was very recently retired. And so, you know, I knew what players talked about in the clubhouse, and I just sort of continued to talk about things just from a healthy perspective.
Well, I appreciate, like I said, I love the blog, and I'm happy to see your success here in the first half, and I appreciate all the time you've given me today while you should be enjoying your vacation. I do appreciate it, and best of luck to you in the second half, and keep it rolling with the Phillies, and thanks for coming on the SI Media Podcast, Gabe. I really appreciate it.
Jimmy, I love the time that we spent together, and I look forward to our next one.
Thanks a lot. All right, that wraps up the interview with Gabe Kapler, and now you're going to hear from the Long brothers, Chris Long and Kyle Long, and they have some good ribbing with each other. So here are the Long brothers on the SI Media Podcast. All right, joining me now are two big NFL guys, big Twitter guys, and they are brothers, very funny guys, Chris and Kyle Long. Chris, I've spoken to before. First time speaking to Kyle. How you guys doing?
Doing great, man. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Well, I'm excited to be on the show, Jimmy.
Thanks. I had Chris on a couple of months ago, and he was phenomenal. He was on his game. We had a good argument about eating scrambled eggs with a spoon, and then I recorded the podcast poorly, and it didn't come out, and it was one of the worst moments of my career. So I was almost. I'm a grown man. I was almost in tears afterwards. It was that devastating.
Well, we had a really insightful discussion.
Yes, the scrambled eggs with the spoon thing is always. Every time I eat scrambled eggs, I think of Chris Long. Basically,
you got to think about it. I mean, I actually ended up accidentally. I had a fork in my hand at breakfast this week. I put it back in the sink and I went and got a spoon.
Kyle, what do you use to eat your scrambled eggs?
I was literally thinking. I hope it's not you, Jimmy, that's eating eggs with a spoon, but I guess it makes sense because my brother is an absolute psychopath.
it definitely is serial killer material, I think, for sure.
I eat with my hands, so it's like, you know.
Well, speaking of food, you guys have teamed up for Applebee's. You guys did a commercial. Is this your first commercial together?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So what was that like for you guys?
Yeah, I was impressed with I do honestly, and I'm not busting. I think he's got a real, if he so chooses, he could be the next action hero. And action movies have gone away, but I think Kyle could revive them. I also think he could be a great pitch man. I thought he was really good.
Kyle has the look for it, too. I could see, like, he's got the rock thing going on a little bit with the, you know, the dome and the voice and everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kyle, what do you think?
Hey, well, you know, any opportunity I have to get a free all-you-can-eat and crush a bunch of riblets and make fun of my brother on camera, I'm going to take it and run with it because it was a really fun day. And, you know, it was our first time doing anything really together other than sports. And it was a lot of fun.
And I got to say, Jim, you show up to these things and you're like, okay, I'm here for an ad. And it sounds like a great, you know, Applebee's doing the all-you-can-eat thing. I got to, you know, it started Monday, so get your ass to Applebee's. But I was impressed because I ate about 26 chicken tenders because we were doing so many takes, and they never got old. I mean, they are really freaking good. And Kyle looked to be really enjoying his riblets too. So
you're basically doing my job for me because my next question was going to be in that ad. Chris is devouring tenders and Kyle is downing a bunch of riblets, and I was curious how much of real food you ate while you did that commercial.
That was the biggest meal I've had in a month.
Yeah, I'd like to have a moment of silence.
How many?
For all the riblets that gave their life.
Gave their life to me that day.
Kyle, how many riblets did you end up doing?
You know, I lost count of riblets. I started counting plates. So I think we were like a half a dozen plates of riblets.
It's a good day at the office.
And Jimmy, this is all in the morning.
Ugh.
Like we shot this thing first thing in the morning because Applebee's. You don't want to disturb the patrons.
Right.
Applebee's is all class.
Right.
And so we get in there before 9 a.m., and I'm smashing chicken tenders like I'm watching, you know, an 8 o'clock football game, college right. football game or something, and it's breakfast.
You know what I always think of when I think of Applebee's? And I don't know if either of you watched it. I hope the answer is yes, because I'll be upset if the answer is no. But it makes me think of Friday Night Lights, because that's where the team always went after the games. Did either of you watch that phenomenal show?
Kyle, go.
Yeah, Friday Night Lights, kind of, it's a microcosm of, you know, the real world. Obviously, it's not real, but in real life, that's where people like to go. And, you know, after football games, after baseball practice, team events, stuff like that, everybody enjoys going to Applebee's. So what better excuse to go than all-you-can-eat riblets and tenders? And I think that holds true now.
And can I use this platform to say that I can't stand the phrase clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose, or whatever it is?
I mean, I'm going to let you use the platform, but I'm insulted, but I'll hear you out. We can argue about this. Let me hear this, because that's...
Maybe I resent it because I didn't watch the show, and all I see is, like, teenagers and, like, aspiring Instagram models with, like, that phrase as their profile.
I've never seen an Instagram model use that phrase, but I'll say this.
I don't know. Maybe I'm conflating. Like,
Chris is one of those uninformed old guys that's just mad at everything that's popular.
I'm an old Chris. I'll do this. I'll make you the if you watch the series. This is how Bailey. I want you to. It's the best show. You have to.
But
watch
you can lose though.
But
can have clear eyes and a full heart. You will lose. That's false advertising.
Okay, but when people say it's raining...
The world is cruel.
Right, but when people say it's raining cats and dogs aren't falling from the ceiling. It's just an...
I don't say it's raining cats and dogs. I say we got slight precipitation, or it's like heavy rain falling.
And I say big old plump juicy rain.
Well, what... I mean, listen. It's an expression, and it's a great show, and the fact that Kyle has seen it and you have not, now Kyle goes up in the long power rankings and you go
That's
down.
Fine, man. I don't really...
What, is there anything I can
maybe
do?
Maybe we can watch it.
What can I do to make you watch that show? It's so good.
I don't know.
Come on.
If somebody... If you can raise $100,000 for Waterboys, I will watch the show on loop for 24 hours at some point.
All right. That's a big number for me, but I'll see what
I
can
24
do.
24 hours of watching that show and listening to garbage lines like that...
Oh,
that's a big number for me.
No, I don't want you to watch it for 24 hours. I want you to watch the whole series. That's what I want.
No, but I mean, I'll watch it on loop for like up to 24 hours and set like a Guinness record.
Okay.
Guinness
right.
Book of World
right.
Records
All
for
right.
watching.
All right. I'm going to...
100K is the magic number, though.
But I will do that. It's a great cause, and it ends up... You will benefit from it, because Waterboys will benefit, and you will be then watching one of the great shows of all time. So we'll do that.
Wow. So what's better, Breaking Bad or Friday Night Lights?
Well, see, now this is where I look like an asshole, because I never watched Breaking Bad.
Oh, my God, bro.
I know. I'm a Sopranos guy. I think Sopranos is the greatest show of all
what
time.
What an ending, man. How deep is that? You don't know what happens.
Well, but you do know what happens if you really dig into it.
I don't know.
I'll send you something after. You'll see. You know what happens. All right. Let me ask you a couple of questions. I mean, we could just go on about this, but I just want to ask you, because this is going to be on the SI Media podcast. So your dad is phenomenal on TV. He's had this long career with Fox. Start with Kyle. Do either of you, obviously you're still playing, but in the back of your head, you think about when this is over, do you have broadcast aspirations at all in following in dad's footsteps in that career as well?
Are we starting with me?
Yes. Kyle, you can go first.
I mean, absolutely. It's something that we grew up around, something we feel comfortable around, at least. I mean, I can only speak for myself, but I know that Chris is very well-spoken, and he's an intelligent guy, understands the game of football, and he's somebody that can break it down into a dialect and a jargon that, you know, the average Joe could get. You know, sometimes we talk football in a football circle, and it's really confusing and complicated to the outside ear, but when you get a guy like Chris on TV, he can break it down to you and put it into simpler terms. I would enjoy it because it keeps you around the game and it keeps you with former players and right. The sense of fraternity and the bonding that goes on with other football players is something unmatched anywhere in society, or at least I haven't found it yet.
Right.
And it's something that I'd be interested in doing, yeah.
Chris, what about you?
I think you could always use more good O-line perspectives. I think they're underrepresented O-linemen in the media who are given real kind of line play insight. And sometimes it's hard, you know, in some of those platforms to really give a topic its due diligence, you know what I mean, on
right.
TV.
Right.
You know, so I'd be excited to see more players like Kyle that play in the trenches, kind of talking the game. And I do have some, I got something cooking. I can't talk too much about it, but I got something cooking, and I'll be ready for the next, transition.
You're definitely going to be running for office, right?
No, not at all.
No politics? Come on.
Magic Mike 3.
No, Neighborhood Watch. I am running for Neighborhood Watch. 2020.
You need to be running for politics with everything you do. We need you as a governor.
I'm not political.
No, not at all. Not at all.
No, I just like decent people.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy how if you want equality and decent things for people, you're considered political?
Yeah, I don't want to.
Kyle, let me ask you this. Since you said you did have the broadcast aspirations and maybe explaining some things, what is going on with this new helmet rule? Do you, as a player, do you understand it? And what should we be looking for here?
You have to refresh my
like with
memory.
The lowering lowering the helmet now is going to be a penalty.
As offensive linemen and Chris being a defensive lineman, our helmets are always used as a weapon. I'd say it's more for guys traveling at 15 yards or more to go get a hit. So like a safety coming down on an out route or a linebacker hitting a guy across the middle. You got to just be very cognizant of the fact that we're not invincible, and sometimes those helmets make us feel as such. And it's something that I think is really important to the league to discuss and to have the players in on the discussions, because obviously it could change, it's going to tweak the margins of the game, I would say. And safety is obviously paramount, and it's a game. At the end of the day, it's a game, and the last thing you want to do is have somebody get extremely injured.
Absolutely. It just sounds like they haven't made it clear, I guess. Is Chris back or not? We can keep going with Kyle if Chris is not back.
No, he doesn't need to be here, dude. All right. Chris is like, what?
Yeah, yeah. When do you report to camp for the Bears? How much more off time do you have?
I've got a couple more days. I'm going to be going down early on Monday.
All right.
I'll try to beat the media circus.
What was the best thing you did this offseason? Most fun.
Best thing I did this offseason? Man, I got, since I've got my health back, I've been able to start lifting a lot more. I feel like working out has been a real highlight of my off season.
Really?
And
come on.
Getting back to Montana is always great.
All right.
We go there every year for the 4th, spending time with the family. But from a personal standpoint, I'd say getting back into the swing of things from a strength and conditioning standpoint, and getting my confidence back in that regard has been big for me.
Now, you've been in the league a while. Do you dread the start of camp? Or I know some players. I know one player in particular who I'm friendly with. I won't say his name, but he's more than happy to not be around for a camp. And then,
Well, I think each team has its own, way of doing things. The way I think of it is it's the first day of school, but there's a fight club at school. And you're going to be happy to see your friends, and then you're going to have to beat them all up eventually. And that's kind of how football is, and that's how I really explain it. I do love the game. I love being around it. But are there other things I'd rather be doing than training camp? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I can't think of many things that I'd rather be doing than playing football on Sunday.
And camp is – it's totally about regimen, right? Like, it's you wake up at the same time every day, you practice at the same time, right? Isn't it just – the same thing. It's like Groundhog Day for you guys.
Yeah,
right?
it's very important. It's a very important thing. It's definitely a part of the wheel that needs to be in there. But on the other side, it's not our favorite time of the year, I'd say, playing games. And I really enjoy practice throughout the week during the season and learning game plans and figuring out how our plan of attack is going to change from week to week.
All right. And no more football. Quick question here. Are you watching your former teammate Jay Cutler's new reality show with his wife? Let's get to the good stuff.
I have not seen the show. Obviously, I'm on Twitter, so I see clips, and it's enough for me to say that that is a very real reality show. What you're getting is the real Jay Cutler.
All right, so you've seen the clip. Yeah, he likes to not do anything, which I can relate to.
He's a model citizen, and he's somebody we should all aspire to be more like.
Jay, and the Bears this season, Trubisky is as the quarterback. What are you got to be pumped up? He showed some really good signs last season as a rookie.
Yeah, he did some special things, and unfortunately, he didn't have a lot of help around him. And this year, credit Ryan Pace for bringing in the right guys. Matt Nagy has done a great job this off season and building trust with Mitch and putting together a really solid group around him. And I'm looking forward to seeing him with the training wheels off this year. That's Mitch, and getting to do what he wants. And as I've said before, letting his freak flag fly. People don't realize how much an athlete he is and how special he is with his arm and the things he sees with defenses. So I'm excited to see him do that and be a part of that and help the team as much as I can in any way I can.
And you're 100% now? You're ready to go? All good?
Yeah, I mean, I'm as good health-wise as I've been in years, and I'm excited to get back out there and help the team.
All right, sounds good. And look, since Chris is not here, he dropped out. Give me one thing about Chris that would embarrass him. What's something? Trash talk him. Give us a secret about Chris that people don't. People know him now. You know, he won the Super Bowl twice. He's big into giving back to the community. Does a ton of charity work. Now do the opposite here. Let's give us something on Chris that we can make fun of him about, besides not watching Friday Night Lights.
So people usually think of pro athletes as like all across the board, great athletes, great at everything they do. Here's some things that Chris really struggles with. Head first dives into the pool. Okay. He doesn't know how to dive into the pool. I think he's afraid of that.
Excellent.
Also, he struggles to ride bicycles. He's not very good on bikes.
Oh, wow.
They have to be stationary. I don't think he's a very good dancer. But, you know, aside from that, all in all, he's a great dude. He's extremely talented. And he's running out of fingers for rings now, so... I don't have much to say in terms of trash talk.
Does he ever rub it in that he has two rings, or does he play it safe and not try to piss off his bigger brother? I know you're younger, but bigger in size brother.
He's pretty cool about it. I beat myself up over it a bunch because, you know, Chris has two rings and I don't. Right. And that's a plan to try to get back to even with him. You know, you got to get one before you get two. So that's our goal.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. It was good talking to you for the first time, and tell Chris where he is. I said thank you, and good luck with camp and the upcoming season. Hopefully you stay healthy and the Bears bounce back.
Thanks very much, man. Have a good one.
You too. Take care. All right. My thanks to Gabe Kapler and the Long brothers, Chris Long, Kyle Long. Those two seem to love being funny, and it paid off for us because they are amusing. Gabe Kapler was very interesting as well. Fascinating guy, and I don't know how you can't root for him, like I said earlier. So that wraps up this edition of the SI Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Traina. Please review, subscribe, do all that good stuff on iTunes. Really appreciate it. And we will see you next week. Take care.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.